Education is made easier with the right administration, the right teachers, and the right technology if the schools can afford it. And one Silicon Valley tech company has made it easier for blind and nearly blind students by creating a machine that helps them read. The company is called Benetech, and its motto is Technology Serving Humanity. It's a different type of tech venture. It measures its success not in dollars, but by service to society and the environment. Sort of a nonprofit charity meets state-of-the-art tech company. The man who founded Benetech is Jim Fruchterman. He's a former rocket scientist turned pioneer in the field called social technology. He was named a MacArthur Fellow, a genius, for his work. Fruchterman came by our studios to talk with KALW's Hana Baba about why he chose social good over monetary profit.
So let's go back in time and remember a time when you were famously, I read this everywhere, that you were a rocket scientist. And, you know, that's like one of the coolest jobs on earth. So when, at what point did you think you wanted to do something different and start up Benetech?
Well, I wanted to become an astronaut. I was an electrical engineer. And so I was learning how to make smart missiles because that's what they taught you when you were becoming an electrical engineer. The class was about how to make a pattern recognition system. And the professor gave the example of making a smart missile with a camera in its nose that had a representation of a tank in its memory. And then you would fire the missile, and it would look around until it spotted something that looked like a tank, and it would
that
zoom in.
Looked like a tank.
Looked like a tank, yeah, and zoom in and blow it up. And I had to do a project for the class, and I went back to my dorm room going, I wonder if there's a more socially beneficial application of this cool technology. And then I just thought, well, instead of recognizing tanks, you could recognize words and read them to blind people. I didn't know any blind people. I just kind of knew that in theory, this should work. And later on, I got the chance to do it.
How? Let's go through that process.
Well, so the venture capitalists in Silicon Valley invested a lot of money in a company that could make a device that could read anything for these commercial goals, routing the mail, scanning in contracts for lawyers. We built a prototype reading machine for the blind, and I demonstrated it to our board of directors, who are mainly venture capitalists. And they said, wow, cool. It scanned a page. It read it aloud using a very synthetic voice. And then they said, how big's the market? And I said, I think it's about $1 million per year. They were underwhelmed with this market opportunity. And so I talked to my lawyer. I said, the board vetoed the reading machine for the blind project, and I'm totally bummed about this. And he said, well, you could start a deliberately nonprofit high-tech company. You can start a charity that makes these. I thought it was going to be about $1 million a year break-even business. And it turned out to be a $5 million a year break-even business because our goal was not to make money. It was to make as many reading machines for the blind as we could while breaking even so that we could keep on making them.
Which is a rare goal in Silicon Valley. You say you don't measure your success in dollars. You measure it through, you know, how beneficial you are to humanity. It sounds utopian, but you're doing it, and you're like the black sheep in Silicon Valley?
Well, we were especially like black sheep about 20 years ago because people were like, you're crazy, right? You're going to take this public and you're going to pocket the money. And I said, no, if you do that with a charity, you go to jail, right? That's bad, right? Because the idea is a charity is already owned by the public, right? And so, but in the last few years, people have taken some of the focus off of the single-minded, you know, drive towards greed, right? More and more companies are saying, wait a minute, we want to be good citizens. You know, Google famously said they didn't want to be evil. Facebook has, you know, this whole expanded idea of what they're trying to do. They're trying to connect the planet. And so just making money at the expense of society is hopefully going out of fashion. And a lot of people who make money as young people are deciding to put a fair amount of that money into philanthropy. And so, though for the first 10 years, we really didn't raise any money because we were a break-even venture, then essentially the two founders of eBay, Jeff Skoll and Pierre Omidyar, became our largest backers through what's turned into be a giant growth phase into a lot of new areas, not just helping the blind.
So tell me about the business model. Is there a business model? Is there kind of a way to measure all of this?
Well, our business model at Benetech is around sustainability. How do we keep on being able to deliver social good? And technology, we make a lot of free software that we but sometimes we say, okay, it's free software. You could make a gazillion copies for free. Matter of fact, we give you permission to. But if you can afford it, it would be great if you sent us $150, right? It's kind of the pledge model of public radio. And you know, you get it for free, but hey, someone's got to pay for it. So pitch in. So in many cases, that's our model, is that we're trying to find a way for us to be able to pay our staff, not top wages, but so they can, you know, pay the rent and, you know, send their kids to school and all that kind of stuff. And so every time we start a new venture, we try to come up with three or four different ways that money would come in that would cover eventually the cost of operating that business. That's usually our goal. So I'll pick some examples. So we write software for the environmental movement. And for the last 3 or 4 years, 100% of what it's cost us to do have come from, I'd say at least 90%, from the large environmental groups. So groups like the Nature Conservancy and World Wildlife Fund use our software, and they send us checks because they want to, A, be a good citizen, and B, sometimes they have, you know, could you add this feature that would be really great for people doing wetlands restoration? Yes, we'd love to. That'll be $50,000. Have you got it? And so, but that enables us to pay engineers to do that.
You won a MacArthur Fellowship. You are officially a genius. And you're blushing over there a little
bit. No, my wife rolls her eyes when people say that. She's like, I have to live with them. Yeah.
You're a MacArthur genius. Hey, they said it, not you. What did you win it for? And it does have to do with literacy and reading.
Yeah, I think that the reason MacArthur said they gave me the award, the fellowship, was because of sort of innovation around helping people with disabilities. First, by making a nonprofit reading machine for the blind company, then we sold that to a for-profit, and then used the resulting money to start Bookshare, which is our largest, well, is the largest digital library for blind people. And I think
you've served 100,000 students over 5 years?
Well, that's what we promised to do, but it looks like we're going to hit 200,000 students over the 5 years for the same amount of money.
Huh.
It's the power of sort of technology. Once you've built a big website that has, you know, 150,000 books, the cost to serve twice as many students isn't as that much more, right? Because it's about building a technology asset. So we're thinking that for the same budget, we could serve 400,000 or 500,000 students with a disability in a year. And that's what we're aiming for, because that's about the number of students in the U.S. that have a disability that keeps them from reading print normally.
And so the machine.
What's that?
The machine. Let's go back to the...
Well, the original reading machine was turning a personal computer into a reading machine. So you had a scanner that plugged into your PC, and then our software would basically use the scanner to take a picture of the page, translate that into like a word processor file, and then the voice synthesizer would then read the book aloud. And of course, voice synthesizers have gotten pretty good these years.
So it recognizes letters, like this, letters.
Yeah. Letters and words.
And it would read it in that word.
And it kind of does some automatic spell checking, so it corrects some mistakes. It's like now you could scan a book and get like 99.something% accuracy. So pretty much you're able to go off and use a reading machine as a blind person to read a book independently. And then the next innovation was we said, oh, we've got 40,000 blind people and dyslexic people using our reading machines to scan books. Let's create a website where they can legally share those books. So Bookshare is sort of, you know, Napster meets Amazon meets Talking Books for the Blind, but legal. And the idea is that it's the first library for blind people that blind people created for each other. We didn't decide what books
so
they wanted to read.
It's crowdsourced.
It's crowdsourced, totally. And it's been around for 10 years. And because it's so cheap when people are crowdsourcing it, that's what's made it the largest library around. So, but it's the whole idea is that you turn a book from being inaccessible, because the people we're talking about can't pick up a print book and read it, you know, because they're blind, because they're so dyslexic they can't read very well, because they have cerebral palsy or they're a returning vet who's been injured and can't, you know, read a book very well, and it turns it into something they can use. That could be large print. It could be Braille. The most common thing is for it to be read aloud, but we have users doing all of the above.
What is this for you personally now?
After 10 years, I met my first donor and actually convinced, or he actually convinced me that I needed his help. My plan was to start a second social enterprise after the Reading Machine for the Blind venture. He said, no, if you do a second one and it's successful as the first, I'll consider you a failure. And I was like, well, stunned. Wait a minute. He said, no, your job is now for your next, you should get like 10 new ventures off the ground, and you shouldn't run any of them. Someone who was like you 10 years ago should be running those. You should be cheerleading and finding them resources. And not only should you do those 10, but you should go out and catalyze 100 or 1,000 ventures like this to get started, because there's all this need. And I kind of was a little taken aback, but I went, ooh, that's what I need to do. So I now spend, 10 or 20% of my time on field building, kind of cheerleading. Yeah, you can do this. It's okay to not make money and do good with technology. You know, there are ways to make it successful. There's even ways to make a living doing it. And so when people tell you, hey, that doesn't make a lot of money, that's stupid, don't do it, you should say, but it does a lot of social good. I'll do it anyway.